Ladies and gentlemen, this is episode 21-23. 23rd episode of 2021. And before I get started, I want to immediately tell you about this show's sponsor, Acticare of the Blue Ridge, ACTICARE.com/blue-ridge. Acticare is in-home senior care for your loved one when you can't be there. If you're in Bedford, Roanoke, Smith Mountain, Lake, Lynchburg, Campbell, out in the country, and you want in-home senior care for your loved one, get in touch with them. ACTICARE.com/blue-ridge. And this one's going to be a little different. I'm going to be talking about suicide, and how when I was young, I tried to kill myself. It was dark. I was aware it was dark. I could hear pain. Her voice filled with worry and anguish. I could hear a smack sound repeatedly. I was aware of my face being struck, but I felt nothing. I wasn't conscious. But I was aware of what was happening. I knew my head was hitting the stairs as I was being pulled by my feet from my bedroom and dragged down to the car. All the while, I could hear the anguish. I was in and out of this awareness. I knew I was transported not by ambulance, but by car, my mom's car. At some point at the hospital, as I was drifting in and out of consciousness, I remember I heard the voice of the Lord, still and small. And he said, "Not yet." It was more than just two words communicating a larger message. Not yet, as in, this isn't something you get to decide. You're not allowed to decide this. He wanted me to know that I have to live, and it's his job to say when that time is to not live anymore. It's hard to describe, and it's the only time in my life I remember that happening, hearing God's voice. It's a voice, but not a voice, as if a thought is implanted in your head. But clearly, not your thought. And when it happens, you know it's not your thought, and you should listen. I have felt at other times God leading me in different ways, but that's the only time I've ever heard his actual voice. I woke in the hospital, fully aware of the great mental pain and suffering I had caused. The previous month was one of boredom, going to class at junior college in the Bay Area of California. I was studying to go into criminal justice and couldn't see a future. I had pulled my shoulder out of joint with the new hip book bag I was carrying over one shoulder, and the doctor gave me a muscle relaxant called Soma. One of the side effects is depression, but I can't recall being depressed. If I had to say anything, I was apathetic. Disconnected, maybe. There was no difference from me having a glass of water or killing myself. I've tried to identify this psychologically in terms of psychology, but I've never been successful. The night before was like any other. No change in routine, but one. As if on autopilot, I wrote a note, set it by my bed, walked into my bathroom, and started taking pills. I didn't take them all. I remember thinking, that should do it, and I left one or two in the bottle, and I am convinced that I would have died had I taken them all, and I believe that God orchestrated all of this for a very important reason. Someone gave me this verse afterwards, and I remember it at the hospital, and it was Jeremiah 29, verse 11. "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare," also translated peace, "and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope." Now, specifically, God in that verse was talking to the nation of Israel, but it resonated with me because I needed to understand that there was purpose to this life. I traveled to Zimbabwe a couple years later on a missions trip for 1 month. I've talked about Zimbabwe. I think I've talked about the missions trip. This was in 1995, around there. When I did, I had to get a bunch of vaccines, and one of these was yellow fever, and I've never been so sick as when I got that. The missions trip went off well, and I returned and tried to plug into life. I got a job, and all was moving along well. I was 21 now, volunteering as a high school youth leader at my church, and while on a missions trip to Mexico with the youth, I started to notice something wasn't right with my health. I was drinking water all the time, and I had no energy. When I returned, I had a couple days off. I sat around the house watching TV, and I got fed up, tired of going to the kitchen for water. I grabbed the jug and I sat down. But before noon, the entire gallon was gone. The next morning, I was so weak I couldn't lift the sheet off of me to get up. I wasn't a doctor, of course, but I knew this wasn't normal and I didn't have a doctor, so I was healthy. So I scheduled an appointment with one close by. She was an idiot. But she knew right away what was wrong. I had type 1 diabetes, insulin dependent, also called juvenile diabetes. When I was 21, how could this be? Well, she sent me to a hospital lab, handed me a long list of prescriptions, and basically said, good luck. That was kind of the attitude she had. I should have been hospitalized as my blood sugar level was over 800. I found this out later, of course. I didn't even know what blood sugar was at that point. But to put this in perspective, anything past 400 can be deadly. I went to the pharmacy and they didn't have half of the long list of things I needed. And I kind of went off on the pharmacist, took my prescription and left. I called my mom and headed her way. She called a friend who was diabetic and went to the pharmacy. We got all the stuff squared away. He showed me how to do all the stuff I had to do. But over the next few weeks, I came to terms with this change in my life. I was 21, and as such had a pistol. It was a Baby Eagle 9mm, made by the same company that makes the Desert Eagle, kind of like the EAA Witness. And I handed it off to my good friend and roommate, as I knew I wasn't in the right frame of mind to deal with my emotional state. I made the decision to move back home with my mom shortly after, and it was a good decision. And while on the 30-minute drive to her house from where I was living, kind of started to lose it. I contemplated suicide again. I remember while exiting the freeway thinking, if I ran into that pole, it would solve this problem. I didn't. I remember two things on that drive. God in the past telling me, not yet. And my mom's pain she felt at my last attempt. You know, suicide doesn't solve the problem. It just passes your pain and suffering on to those that love you. I want to circle back to my story in a few minutes, but here are some real numbers, real people. Every day in Virginia, 3.6 people kill themselves. It's a total of 1,140 every year. In 2017, the number of young people that killed themselves was 8.7 young people every day across the United States, 6,200. And every day, 17 and as many as 22 veterans kill themselves. That's a total of 8,000. And what got me thinking about all this is I was listening to a podcast by Jocko. And he had a man on named Mike Day, and he was shot 27 times. It's a great show, and you can find it linked on my show notes at radiofreevirginia.com. But I want to share this audio with you because it made me think about my experience. And I think you might find it beneficial. And so take a listen.
My mind seemed to be stuck on a one-track narrative that became darker with each episode. Every minute of every day, there was this weird repeating internal monologue that opened with guilt, which created a feeling of shame. I would fixate on things that supported this monologue, like bailing out of the Iron Man, which I was sure disappointed the donors, the treatment facility, my clients and my family. My anemic efforts at work reinforced my shame. That's when all the what ifs began chiming in. What if I get fired from my job? Will we lose the new house and all my money? What if the people who donated to my fundraiser think I'm a fraud because I didn't do the full Ironman? These thoughts would lead to embarrassment, which deepened my feelings of shame. I was trapped in this desperate, repeating, irrational monologue that sounded all rational to me. I personally knew people like Dan, Mark, Holly, and Tyler who had far worse injuries than me and far more stressful lives and who were all managing themselves well, but for some reason I just couldn't put things in perspective. I was locked in an irrational, disproportionate, escalating mental prison. I sat in my truck. I had researched how to do it, exactly where to place the barrel and how to angle the gun. I had practiced it with a cleared weapon and pulled the trigger. I didn't want to leave a mess for someone else to clean up. I would not do it in my truck so someone else could use it. The bullet would go through my heart, there would be an instant of pain, and then I would be gone. I would do to myself with one bullet what four enemy fighters failed to accomplish with 27. I stared at the black gun in my hand. I had used one like this to kill before. I was numb and sad, confused and tired. I had cried alone so many times. My downward spiral had come to its final resting place. At the bottom was hopelessness. The built-up stress, the lingering effects of trauma, my psychological deficits all colluded to create a condition of hopelessness. My mind worked trying to come up with an explanation to justify my final act to my two beautiful daughters. Years ago in that room at that compound, the thought of not being able to see their faces again terrified me. Images flashed in my mind, holding my daughter's little hand in her own as we sat together, the way the girls would wrap their arms around my neck and hug me, their soft little voices called out, "Oh, Dad." Their smiling faces repeatedly flashed in my mind. There was the disproportionate feeling of guilt and shame that relentlessly stalked me. I felt trapped in a life layered with overwhelming stress, endless responsibilities, meaningless tasks, and toxic people of whom I felt I was the most toxic. It was all my fault. I felt I was my own worst enemy. This time there was a bullet in the chamber. I was beyond contemplation. My mind was made up. I mentally paced back and forth, working up the courage the same way I had when I hit my father with the bat. I was getting out of my truck when my phone rang. I looked down at the number. It was Scott Heinz, my boss. I picked up the phone in one hand and held a gun in the other. I let it ring, not wanting to answer. I couldn't do it with Scott calling, so I put down the gun. I answered, "Hey, Scott, what's up?" And Scott says, "Mike, I want you to take the next 3 months to chill out. I'm going to pay you. Relax, take your time, and find a new job. I'll help you out however I can. You're beyond burned out. You did amazing work, but there's a time limit for how long you can do this job, and you maxed it out." My boss and good friend had just given me the hope I needed to climb out of the very deep hole I'd found myself in. In that instant, I could not have answered my phone for anyone other than Scott. Scott had seen it all before. He knew that I was surrounded by wounded, sick, and injured people all day. Scott also knew that many of the people who I had been meeting with every day for years, including patients, their family members, veterans, service members, and hospital staff, were struggling with depression. It's like an alcoholic tending a bar. You can only hold out for so long. If you're around depressed people all the time, you become depressed too. I suspect that some of you reading this may now think that I'm crazy and write me off. Thank you for coming this far with me. For the rest of you who have ever been depressed or suicidal, I can tell you that while I fully believed at the time that I was thinking rationally, I know now that I was not. My irrational thoughts had started repeating themselves. The world will be better off without me. I don't care anymore. I just want out of here. I'm a horrible person. My future will just be filled with more of the same stress. These thoughts seemed totally rational and true in my compromised state, but I had no idea that my thinking was compromised. What scared me the most about these thoughts and the entire experience is what happened to me just a few months later. Brenda, in her desperation to help, convinced me to visit a physician who had a protocol to treat depression and other conditions. I resisted at first, of course, but finally agreed to work with the guy, if only to get Brenda and everyone else off my back.
That's why I did it.
Man, you get it's interesting, you know, you talk about the like now you can look back and see that you weren't rational.
Oh yeah.
But at the time there's just, you know,
it's a chemical imbalance. I mean, a terrible place to be, but since I've been there, I know I can't get there again. And that was one phone call from one person that stopped me. So I almost didn't answer that phone.
Yeah, and I think obviously the lesson there is...
it messes a lot of people up. The secondary, tertiary effects. I told our nutritionist about it, who helped me out with the guys that I was assigned to. Told her what I had almost done, and she was like, "Do you know how many people that would have hurt?" I never considered that. I thought I was doing people a favor. That's how irrational I was. But I've been around families where there's been a death by suicide, and it's terrible what it does to the people that are left behind. It's they don't recover from it.
So there's something I want to drill home with you, and it's that suicide hurts the ones you love, and it doesn't solve your problems. And beyond that, it's giving in to Satan's plans. The devil doesn't want you to succeed. He doesn't want God to use you for the things that you're purposed for. So bear with me here for a little bit as I preach. God has plans for you. And as I shared in that verse from Jeremiah, plans to prosper you and give you a hope and a future. No, not some name it and claim it, you know. Means all your wildest dreams will come true. But you are loved. You have purpose, and it is your one job. You say, you know, you have one job. It's your one job to live out that purpose. You are going to die, and we are all one heartbeat away from eternity, but we don't get to decide when that is. And if you don't know Jesus, you need to. The Bible tells us we should examine ourselves to see if we are in the faith. And it's not complicated, and it's sad that so many preachers make it complicated. Would you consider yourself to be a good person? Simple question. Well, let's see if that's true. Do you think you've kept the Ten Commandments? Have you ever told a lie? And what does that make you? Ever stolen anything? How about what does that make you? Ever committed adultery? Because Jesus said, if you look at a woman with lust, you've committed adultery in your heart. Ever murdered anyone? Jesus said, if you hate your brother, you're a murderer. But based on your answers, maybe you're a liar, a thief, adulterer, a murderer, and I've only mentioned 4 of the 10 commandments. So if God judges you, based on his standards, not yours, would you be innocent or guilty? Well, I know the answer for me, why I reached out to God, why I wanted to know him, because I knew I was guilty. 1 Corinthians 6:9 says, "Or do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived, neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor men who practice homosexuality, nor thieves, nor the greedy, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. The guilty will not enter heaven. They go to hell. Hitler, he's in hell. Stalin, he's in hell. But there are lots of good persons that are too. But here's the good news. And this is what's the simple part. So simple. God sent his one and only son, Jesus, to free us from sin and to provide a way to heaven. All you have to do is repent, and that's simple. Turn from your sin and confess that Jesus is Lord. It's really that simple. So I want you to think about that, because it really does matter. It's really important. So back to my story. Well, I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And in a lot of ways, I've rode the rails God has put before me. So here's the Cliff Notes version. Diabetes brought into my life depression, not clinical depression, more just like a state of being kind of down. I got really mad at God. because the I started looking at, you know, Jeremiah 29:11. It was like, well, what kind of hope and future is this? How dare you, God? What have you done to me? You've made me a pan. I wanted to be a pot. But I got into skydiving, and magically, I was not depressed anymore. That was a lot of fun. Did that for 200 jumps. I started working for the phone company and saving to buy a house. And I moved 80 miles away because it was close to a drop zone. Bought a home and started attending a church in the area at the suggestion of my mom, because she saw the pastor preach at a Christian camp she visited with her church youth. My soon-to-be wife had moved into the area at the same time. I was going to that same church because of the same pastor offering her dad a job. Our first day was on Valentine's Day. Our wedding was in November, and we now have two amazing boys. And this November will be 20 years that we've been married. 29 years ago, I couldn't see a purpose and a hope and a plan. I knew where I was going. I knew Jesus. I wanted to go be with him. I couldn't see his hope and his providence, but I can look back now and I can see it. In Isaiah 55, the Bible says that, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." And there's something very freeing about understanding that you're not in charge. There's something very freeing about providence. What has made me not fear this COVID thing is God's providence, knowing that my day will come when he chooses to have it come. And there's nothing I can do to change that. I've communicated that to you all. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. He doesn't think like us. And, well, I'm actually glad about that. If you're not a believer and you listen to this podcast, that's okay. Thank you for indulging me here. I just think it's important that we not pretend that things like suicide don't exist and that they're not a problem in our society and in our youth. And because we have it so good here that it wouldn't ever impact us. That's never going to happen to me. No, not my kids. No, not my family. Because it could. So here's some simple resources for you. Okay. SuicidePreventionLifeline.org. SuicidePreventionLifeline.org. 1-800-273-8255. If you're a veteran, contact the VA's crisis line at 1-800-273-8255 and push 1 for veteran services. Veterans chat can be accessed at veteranscrisisline.net. And veterans text is available at 838-255. You know, looking back, the hardest part is I think I'm really sorry that my mom had to go through that. But I honestly think that God orchestrated all of that and as a way to prepare me for what was to come. Because when I was older, I would have had the tools and I would have had the ability to follow through and get the job done. And he wanted me to experience the suffering that that causes to other people. And it's what I want to communicate to you. The pain and the suffering that that can cause to the people that you love. Which is why these conversations are important. It's worth having. This was over almost 30 years ago. But it's something that nobody wants to talk about. We don't like talking about this because we can, oh, this would never happen. And I hope it never does to you. Please, don't cause your family the pain of your loss. If you've ever lost a loved one to natural causes, it's hard enough to cope with. We lost my father-in-law back in 2019, and that was really hard. It's hard now. Don't cause that pain to to someone you love. Seek help. There are resources and counseling available. And make sure to invest in the lives of your young people, your children, and have this conversation with them. Well, I'd like to thank you for listening. I'm Hank Reardon. This is Radio Free Virginia, and I'd like to remind you, you were not made to fit in. You were born to stand out. God bless you.